Welcome to Cannabis Health Radio, a podcast where we share stories from people around the world who are using cannabis as medicine. The information is meant to raise awareness about the health benefits of cannabis, but should not be taken as medical advice. Now, here are your hosts, Ian Jessup and Corey Yelland.
Welcome to the Cannabis Health Radio Podcast. I'm Ian Jessup.
And I'm Corey Yelland.
They say that cervical cancer is the fourth most common form of cancer in women worldwide and is most often diagnosed between the ages of 35 and 44. Our guest today was diagnosed with cervical cancer in 2021 and underwent conventional treatment but stopped when she discovered cannabis oil. And joining us from the UK is Kim, who doesn't want us to use her last name, so we won't. Kim, thanks for doing this. Now, do you remember the day that you were diagnosed with cervical cancer?
Yeah, very, very clearly, because I stepped in the office kind of excited to find out why I had a lot of blood. And it was the last thing I was expecting. It wasn't even in my thoughts that it was cancer. So I was completely taken by surprise. I literally was on my way to work. So it was kind of like a pit stop, which turned into a, not so much a pit stop going to work.
Yeah, it's kind of a hellish day for you.
Yeah.
Now, prior to the diagnosis, what sort of symptoms were you experiencing?
The only symptom I had was blood. I was diagnosed in the June of 21, and in the January, I was pregnant and I had a miscarriage, which obviously at the time I just thought it was a miscarriage. But then 6 months later, when I was talking to the oncologist, he informed me that it was very much part of it. Well, basically it was the tumor that had stopped the baby from growing. But back then, and I'd seen quite a few gynecologists who had even said to me, this isn't, I don't think this is cancer related. It was actually an MRI at the end of my journey of trying to find out why I was having so much blood. It was the MRI that kind of gave it away.
I mean, that's a hell of a thing to undergo, a miscarriage, and be diagnosed with cancer within a 6 month period. I mean, how were you dealing with this mentally and emotionally?
I think I've been on a bit of a roller coaster anyway, because I'd just gone through a divorce, and then so I'm quite proactive. Mm-hmm. And I just deal with them head on. And like the whole last 3 years, I've just taken it step by step. And I know this sounds a bit crazy, but I try and find as many positives I can from situations that aren't great. So I think, and also it was quite a journey from the January with the miscarriage. Mm-hmm. To the June, it was just a journey, basically.
Kim,
can you blame it all on your ex-husband?
Yeah, what went through your mind when you were told that you had cervical cancer? Was that even on your radar at all?
No, I can't really remember, because the journey I was on took another turn about 6 months later. And for me, that was the most pivotal point of my entire journey. And that, for me, it's funny when people say, is that one of the worst days? The first day when I found out, it wasn't, because at that point I was curable. I went to the oncologist, I was curable, but then 6 months later, everything turned and changed. And that's when, for me, it just was a lot harder and it hit home.
So after...
Now, Kim, when you were... Go ahead, Corey.
After your diagnosis, then, did you go and do the required treatments? What did they propose to do with you? And what did they say to you about the status of this, et cetera, please?
So back then, it was stage two. And my oncologist was very, very, can't think of the word, but he was certain it was curable. Obviously, he couldn't say 100%, but he was very positive about the diagnosis and the way forward. And it was conventional. It was chemotherapy, radiotherapy, and then brachiotherapy. And back then, you know, you're sitting in this chair being told your diagnosis, and the only people you trust in the world are the doctors in front of you. You take every word. You feel, I mean, now you feel quite a victim at that point. And you want some help. And the only person who's going to help you is that person sitting opposite you. So you take their word for it. So I did all the chemo and the radio. And it was quite quick. It was over a course of 5 weeks. And then the brachiotherapy. And then I had a rest from hospitals for about 3 months until the next scan, which was a PET scan in the January of 22.
So you had your PET scan in January of 22.
Yeah.
What did that tell you?
So I went in really thinking that because I felt fine, I felt good. Anyway, I had the news that it had spread and it had gone up to my into my lymph nodes. And so my oncologist and I always got along with my oncologist. I've changed because I've actually moved across the country since. So that's why I say was. And even he was really upset to the point where he had a tear in his eye because I think he was so surprised that what had happened. It spread to my lymph nodes. So it had gone from curable to treatable. And then he put me straight on to the word palliative, which I can't stand that word. I don't know if it's the same everywhere, but in the UK, just hearing that word, you kind of sign. And that for me, that I just remember that day so clearly. It was kind of like, for me, it was the end. I started thinking, I'm not going to see my daughter get through primary school. I'm not going to be able to, because at the time I was living with my mum. So my mum was also going through cancer. She had cancer of the liver. So we were both under this roof. We called us the Cancer Club. Not going to buy a house. So it literally, I just couldn't see much further along apart from, okay, I'm going to do this chemotherapy, but I've just been told that it's not curable. And it just, everything changed that day. So that's the day I really remember.
That must have been harder for you emotionally than the very first day you were diagnosed.
Yeah.
Especially with the word palliative. I mean, to me, when I hear that word, it's like, well, there's no hope for you. Let's just take care of you till you die.
Yeah. And in my head, I kept thinking of hospices and I just felt like I was signed off. And because I went to the appointment with my, my husband, and we just sat in the kitchen all day, just kind of staring into space because everything, you just felt life had changed.
So did you continue with chemo after the diagnosis that it had spread to your lymph nodes?
So at this point, I underwent 6 months of chemo. Again, because I hadn't explored any other options. The only thing that had been told to me by my oncologist, he just mentioned CBD oil. Because I think I was talking, you know, are there any other advances? And he just tipped me off with CBD oil. That's the only thing I knew so far at this point. I underwent 6 months. Halfway through, I had another PET scan because my oncologist wanted to see, obviously, if the chemotherapy was successful, and it was. And there was, at that point, there was no evidence of disease. So halfway through the chemotherapy, I was reacting quite badly to the chemo, I had to be admitted into hospital with sepsis. This was in sort of the second phase. And then the chemotherapy was reduced. And again, I didn't really understand everything that these drugs were doing to the inside of my body. I just hadn't done the research. I hadn't had anyone close to me. And I don't know, again, because of where I live, there's just not that access. So then in the summer, I finished the chemotherapy, had another scan, which was still clear. And then I was put forward for a clinical trial for cervical cancer patients, which, again, I undertook. But I literally undertook it for about 2 weeks and my body rejected it immediately. And I stopped that.
What was the clinical trial of a new drug of sorts?
Yeah, so it was there were two drugs that they use in cancer patients. One is in ovary cancer patients. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the name. I know they end with lab, so I'm not very helpful here.
No, that's okay.
I just remember them as I hated them. And I took those, but I was feeling far worse taking them than not taking them. And I just thought, well, it's just not worth it to feel like this. And I was literally throwing up all the time.
So Kim, how did you get on to cannabis oil?
So, in that summer when I just finished my chemotherapy, I was moving from one part of the country to the other. And it was actually the removal man who I was talking to. And I was talking about CBD oil, and then he mentioned THC oil. And I just thought, no, I know I've got the CBD oil. This is what you're supposed to be taking. And then he sent me a few weeks later all the Rick Simpson, like the protocol. And so that's when I started doing this research. Mm-hmm. And it took me a good few months because I've never smoked, I've never done any kind of recreational drugs ever. So it did really scare me. And it took me a while. And in the October, I had another scan and then a lymph node had appeared on my aortic, somewhere around there. And then I had more radiotherapy. I'm quite cross with myself for keep going back. It wasn't until after that, I literally, by Christmas of 2022, I was in such a place where I kind of given up, which is not like me because I'm quite a positive and proactive person. Mm-hmm. And I just, there was no point anymore. But then this whole thing of the oil, cannabis oil, I thought, right, January, I'm going to start this new year. And so I started it following the protocol, taking really, really small amounts, joining lots of Facebook forums to help in the sense of, because I was just quite nervous about how much you take, should I feel like this afterwards, just because I'd never felt these feelings. I remember watching and listening to loads of Cori podcasts and how she'd advised people, and then obviously on here. So I was really trying to do my research. Then my next scan, which was 3 months later, that was my first clear scan since the whole beginning of this entire journey. It was my first clear scan, which was really nice because unfortunately, 2 weeks before my scan, I'd lost my mum to the cancer. So my mum died of the cancer of the liver, which was really sad because when I'd found out about the oil, I was very much like, right, come on, mum, we're going to do this together. And I was trying to give her, but I think that older generation, she was even more nervous than me. And she was very, very resistant. And her cancer was a lot more further along than mine. So I then had that clear scan, which was just the most amazing news ever. And then I've had two more scans since then. So I'm having them every 6 months. And every single one now has been clear since I've been taking cannabis oil.
What was your doctor's reaction to that? Kim? What was your doctor's reaction?
Because of me moving, I had to change my oncologist. So the first one never knew, and I haven't been, because I feel, especially in the UK, some doctors, well, as you know, are they're interested in the whole research of it, and some are just not. And it's just somewhere at the moment I don't want to go with my new oncologist. My old one, I would have shared with it, because actually when he said about the CBD oil, he then mentioned a few visits later, he said the darker the better. And at that time I was like, what does he mean, the darker the better? But now I look back and I think, oh, it's like code. Yeah. He was trying to tell me. So I haven't told my current one, but after I'd had the radiotherapy before I'd taken the oil, I also got diagnosed with a hyperactive thyroid, which I think was related to a lot of radiotherapy. So obviously I went under the endocrinology doctor, and by the time I started the oil a few months later, that had completely gone. And they were very much like, oh, so you started taking the medication then? And as in the pharmaceutical medication. And I said, no, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't want to take any more medication. And that's sort of where I am now. And I feel this has been my journey since I've been taking the cannabis oil. Is, I mean, I've changed my diet, which I know you both talk about a lot, and you see, I've changed my diet. I've changed where I live. I've moved across the country. So I've tried to change my lifestyle. I do a lot of fasting now as well. And then obviously the cannabis oil.
That's amazing. How was your diet before?
It was never bad. I've always been fairly healthy. I mean, I love exercise, so I exercise. I've always exercised. And I think that was the problem I had with my first diagnosis was, I'm healthy, I'm fit, but mine was HPV related, with the cervical cancer. But I think I was eating chicken a lot and a lot of protein. I mean, and sugar, I did eat quite a bit of sugar, but now I've just completely wiped. I don't eat sugar, and I'm trying to be really a lot of fruit and vegetables again, just through so much research. And going back to this whole thing that when, you know, however we were put on this earth, there were these vegetables and plants, and that's what is here for us, not all the stuff in boxes. And it just starts, everything kind of is like a jigsaw being put together, and it makes sense. And that we have, and I'm probably going to say this word wrong, so I apologize now, the whole learning about the endocannabinoid system.
Well, yeah, done.
Yeah. But we have this in our bodies, and yet in this country it's an illegal substance. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah,
doesn't make any sense.
Kim,
it doesn't make any sense to a lot of people around the world.
Something I just want to bring up for listeners here that Kim mentioned was that the cancer that she had was HPV based. There's a article that goes around, comes through my feed occasionally, scaremongering people who have HPV-based cancers, telling them that THC is going to accelerate that. So Kim is yet another example of somebody who overcame an HPV-based cancer with cannabis oil. The cancer that I fought was HPV-based. Almost all anal cancer is HPV-based. I have a lot of men with oral HPV-based cancers now, and we're resolving a number of them on high THC. So I just want to kind of reassure listeners who may have come across that, don't necessarily read or believe everything that you read, okay? Because Kim and myself are just two examples.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I do remember reading that as well. But I just, yeah.
You Kim, just how much cannabis do you consume daily?
So I feel I do like a maintenance dose now. So quite a small amount, and I take it before bed.
Mm-hmm.
But I do it every single day.
Great.
And that's what I've been doing, because I feel, well, yeah, just every single day, but a small amount. And it's just been very consistent for over a year now.
Is it hard for you to obtain in the UK?
Well, yes. I mean, you kind of have to have your connections. And my connection was the removals van from when I moved house. But I know that it is, because when I move to where I do, there's just in a local town, there's a CBD cafe. And when I first moved, you know, you're trying to find links, but everything has to be so, people don't want to give away or give away things, as in not the product to give away, but to say that they can give it to you, because they're being monitored.
They don't want to be identified.
These people are really, really helpful in telling you lots of information, but obviously they can't say where or how. I mean, this person did tell me how I could make it, and I guess if I lost the person who I get it from, if I lost that connection, then I'd have to think of other ways making it myself.
Corey Kim mentioned an interesting point that we face when we talk to people, both on this podcast and elsewhere, is that so many people believe that CBD is the answer to helping them with cancer. And I don't know, we it's almost a daily misconception that people have that we get here, isn't it?
Yeah, and it makes me crazy. And I'll tell you why it makes me crazy. It's costing people their lives, okay? So even people who have been on oil, high THC oil, often will refer to it as CBD oil. There's already so much misinformation out there on CBD, partially, I think, because there's so many multi-level marketing companies with it, et cetera. But please be very, very clear. CBD on its own does not kill cancer. You need the entourage effect. You need all the components. The THC is the key. Mm. The key to killing cancer. On a very rare occasion, I think maybe CBD on its own has killed cancer, but you need that THC. So many, many individuals go out and get CBD and think it's going to kill the cancer, and it's not. I can't tell you how many patients that we've lost because of that.
Yeah, there was a woman that sent us an analysis of the product that she was using for her husband. It showed that THC was around 21-22% in one sample, and in the other sample, it was hardly detectable.
Yeah.
It's tragic that there are people out there selling product to people who have cancer and who are essentially dying of cancer. And they're doing it just to save money or just to make money.
Yeah.
And but you're dealing with people's lives, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
It's harsh.
It is.
So, Kim, you must feel a heck of a lot better today than previously.
Oh, I feel like my life's changed. And I'm sure there are so many people the same that, it's very frustrating that it takes something like this to reflect on your life and to make changes. And it has. You know, I've changed everything I do, live, work, what I do for work, how I eat. And I feel I have, you know, a future, and particularly having a daughter, a young daughter, I can now see forward. Where before I wasn't seeing any of that. I saw the end, where now I see the rest of my life. And it's just, I look back and sometimes I wish I'd found out about all of this sooner, because then I think I could have changed things for my mum, for example. But in my own way now, being in the UK, there are more, obviously my small circle of friends know what I do. But I feel I just want to just spread the word. Mm-hmm. Because I look back, you know, even just saying to you, I had chemo, I had radio, then I had more radio. I feel bad for saying all of that because it's now, I mean, if it came back again, I wouldn't go the conventional route anymore. I wouldn't do that because the one thing that chemotherapy did to me, one of the side effects was it damaged my inner ear. And so it's not, it doesn't completely get in the way. I can still do everything I usually do in life, but I feel constantly on the edge of vertigo. And I've had that diagnosed and that was because of the chemotherapy. So I know that going forward in life, if anything did come back, I wouldn't go down the conventional pharmaceutical route. I would stay.
So the inner ear problem is a result of a consequence of chemotherapy side effect.
Yeah, because I had, so when I got the first diagnosis, I had one round, well, not one round, but a summer of chemotherapy, and that was cisplatin. And then half a year later, then I had 6 months of another, because it's linked to platinum-based drugs, chemotherapy drugs, which I had quite a lot of them.
Kim, do you have a supportive network of friends around you?
Yeah. Yeah. At the time, because my mum and I were going through it at the same time, obviously we were very, very close and completely understood, because I think that's one thing with having cancer, it's very hard. Even the people who are so close to you and support you, no one will really, really understand. And being younger, I felt really, really lonely. That's one thing I felt. Even though I had so much support and love, I felt very alone. And when you go in to have chemotherapy or the treatments, usually so many people would look at you because you were so much younger in those rooms. And obviously there, I've made quite a few friends who have gone going through the same thing, who are similar age as me. But at the time, you do feel quite isolated and alone. And people always say, oh, you know, don't feel alone, but you do. And I don't know. And the other thing, and I don't know if it's a UK, sometimes you feel cancer is more of a taboo word. I mean, even what's happened over here in the last week with, you know, the royal family, it took a while for that news to come out. And I think somebody who suffered with it, you do wonder, do you have to be ashamed? I don't know. It's a touchy subject, I guess, for some people, but it's so real. It's out there.
Yeah, and it's the whole terminology, as we said from the beginning, of various forms of care, like palliative care. I mean, when I hear palliative care, I think, what does that mean? Does that mean they're going somewhere in some home and they're just waiting to die? It's an incorrect term. And I think one of the things with cancer, and we've interviewed over 400 people here on this program with cancer, is that when you get cancer, you start to think about the possibility of dying, which you never thought of before, right? We all think we're going to live forever, and we don't. But when you get cancer, especially at a younger age, you think, Jesus, what the hell's wrong? And it's a tough thing to deal with emotionally. And I think you have to have the attitude that you do, that you look at the positives of everything and try and think positively as opposed to thinking negatively, which will just kind of drain you of your energy. And I think you've done a remarkable job in that. That's great. So you are cancer-free for how long now?
A year and a half.
Year and a half.
Good for you.
Kim, is there anything you'd like to tell folks in conclusion?
I think just to not feel being a victim, to take control and to know that you can take control. because I think that's the biggest thing. As soon as you're given that diagnosis, you feel you have no control over your body. And then, but as soon as you feel you can have some control and gain control and switch that mind, that mindset is incredible. As soon as you do those things, I think you can begin to tackle what's ahead of you.
Yeah, very well said. Well, Kim, it was wonderful to talk to you. Good luck in the future. I know you've got this and you understand it, that will be of benefit for you for the rest of your life. And life will change for you, but it will change for the better. It was great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for doing these podcasts, because they're very inspirational and motivational when you're going through dark times. They're really helpful.
Before we go, I want to let our listeners know that you can help us spread the word about the amazing, often life-saving health benefits of cannabis just by sharing the podcast, writing a review, or rating us. We very much appreciate the help of everyone who's done that already. And we really like the 5-star ratings. We'd also like to thank those of you who support the show by making a one-time donation or a monthly donation on our Patreon page, which you can do for as little as $5 a month. It helps to keep us running. You'll find out how to do that on our website, cannabishealthradio.com. Thank you for your support. It means so much to us. And we'll be back again next week with another episode of Cannabis Health Radio.
Thanks for listening to Cannabis Health Radio. For more information and to search previous podcasts, visit our website, cannabishealthradio.com. Subscribe so you don't miss new episodes. And follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. This podcast is made possible by donations from our listeners. If you found the information helpful, please consider making a donation in any amount through our website. You can also help us share our message by leaving a review on your podcast listening platform. We are very grateful for your support. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's show. To check out more great cannabis podcasts, go to podconnects.com. Here's a preview of one of our other shows.
Hi, y'all. I'm Joe, host of Casually Baked, the podcast. If you're curious to explore the highly responsible side of cannabis, farming, and legalization, I'm here to help lighten the stigma and build your canna confidence. Download episodes now of Casually Baked, the podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. And journey with me through the evolving cannabis culture and discover how and why people like you are adding cannabis to their wellness toolkit. It's time to get casually baked.